I'm Joe, one of the teaching pastors here. We are glad that you're here with us this evening. We are at this time in our service going to move into a time of generosity when those of us who love this place give back. So if you guys, I don't know what you're officially called, generosity money taker people, if you guys could come down. We believe strongly in Jesus' words where he says it's more blessed to give than to receive, and that is only often figured out by starting to be generous, and then we realize it unlocks us in many ways, helps us not be selfish, helps us realize that God is a generous God. So this is a time when we do that. Many of us give online. You can do that through the PushPay app if you want to download that and give that way. We've started a new thing called Ask Me Anything. It's not always me, but it was last time. It's Tuesdays at 1:30 on Facebook. Facebook is this website that the kids are on. A few hundred million of them. 1:30 this Tuesday, Charlie will be there, and Jason Hills sort of just facilitates a time for you to ask one of our pastors anything you want to ask. This series has been talking about doubt and belief and faith, so if you have questions around that, that's great. You can also ask Charlie questions about golf or anything else you want to. More likely, since I'm teaching, you'll ask him, what did Joe mean when he said this? And I'll be watching so that I can find out as well. So that's Tuesday at 1:30. It's been a fun thing. We hope you'll join us with that. We're in this series that maybe if you're new here, you might not expect the church to be doing a series about losing your faith. But here at Southbrook, we believe very seriously that it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to be a skeptic. Even in the mission of our church, we say that we are here to help people who don't go to church and who are skeptics discover Jesus and then to live like Jesus forever. So that's the mission of our church. I am a pastor officially. I also have a business that I run throughout the week, so I'm bivocational. And I have experienced many doubts throughout my life. It's interesting. I think a lot of people assume that if you are a pastor or you work for a church, then you just stop doubting. And maybe that's true for some people, but not for me. So I'll be talking a little bit today very personally about my own faith journey. And hopefully that will connect with some of you. I love this quote. My friend Laura Buffington, you guys know Laura. I asked her to write my messages for me, so she sent me. she's smarter than me. I was telling her what we're going to talk about, and she said, you know that quote by A.E. Whitman, right? And I said, I don't know who A.E. Whitman is. And she texted it to me. And so if this isn't actually his quote, you can find Laura. But I loved it, because it resonated so much with my own journey. He's a Methodist minister who lived a century ago or so. It is a great gift to have a lot of faith and a little doubt, but it is a greater gift to have a lot of doubt and a little faith. I don't know if that's true, but it made sense to me, because I definitely fall in the latter category of someone throughout my life, I feel like, has had a lot of doubt. And I may quibble over even some words there. I think I struggle with belief a little more than faith. I would say faith is acting on what you believe. For me, I'm a certain kind of person with a certain kind of personality that's very, I'm a T on the Myers-Briggs, if you guys are into that. I like to think about things. I ask a lot of questions. And so it's not natural for me to just sort of believe something that I'm told. It feels like for some people it is natural. And maybe that's what this pastor here is trying to say. That there are some of us, and I know people like this, I may or may not be married to a person like this, who was given, I think, a gift of faith or belief or whatever we want to think about it. My wife wouldn't have any doubts had she married someone else. It's just having me around all the time has rubbed off and made her ask questions she shouldn't be worrying about. But there are some people, and I do believe it is a great gift, and Paul even talks about a gift of faith in his writings, And that may be what this means, which is that you receive God and Jesus, and it's sort of in your heart, in your soul, in your mind, and it's good, and it very rarely wavers. Maybe not at all. And you're full steam ahead to spend the rest of your life doing your best to honor God because you never doubt God or God's claims. I have met people like that, and I sincerely believe them that they are that way. There are other people who receive the message of God and often deeply want to be that way, but can't help but ask questions. And the asking of the questions can create a tension in their faith or in their belief. And those are the sorts of folks that I deeply resonate with. Perhaps it is possible we talk about the movie The Matrix too much in the American church, but I remember watching the movie The Matrix and thinking, oh, there's a scene where you guys know The Matrix, right? It's the Third Testament. If you haven't seen it, I don't know if I should tell you to see it or not. But it's about this idea that what we think is real may not be real. And there's this scene where a character named Cypher knows that steaks, like, you know, a porterhouse, isn't real. It's just in his imagination when he eats it in the Matrix. But he says, I wish I could just go back and have a steak again and believe it's real. And I think a lot of us have that with our faith where, you know, we've asked enough questions that sometimes we wish we could go back to a more simple understanding like we used to have. But what I like about what this pastor says is I've noticed that the people who ask the most questions, who maybe say they struggle the most, do tend over time, if they allow themselves to be that way, and don't give up on the questions, allow themselves to be relatively wise at some point, open-minded, humble, knowing that they don't know everything. And I am still waiting on those things to happen to me. I hope they will. I think they have in spurts. I love being around older people, which I am one now, but I love being people around that have been on a journey with God for 50, 60, 70 years and haven't been afraid to ask the questions and to see something in them that maybe is a depth that may be the gift, you know, that those of us like that get, that we're not afraid to ask. There are many reasons to believe in God, and we've talked about them throughout this series. I'm a thinker, like I said. There are things in science that point me towards a belief in some sort of God. There are things I've experienced, for sure. There are also things that make me question it. One of the things we're talking about specifically today, though, is sort of this idea that maybe there is a deep-seated knowing, feeling, understanding, reality, that we're not alone. That maybe those of us who would self-identify as agnostic, or even maybe, I have a lot of friends that say, I think I'm an atheist, which is agnostic. So, you know, we'll say things like, but I do sense or feel that there's something more, or there's something other. Often that begins a conversation about things like love and compassion. Some things that are scientific, you know, are some things like evolution or whatever could attempt to explain, but it also feels like maybe it needs an injection of something other to explain why do we self-sacrifice so much? Why is it that in every culture all over the world there are certain key moralities that seem to be consistent as if they were put there somehow? People will talk about, I don't know who God is or if there's a God, but I do believe in mystery. I hear people say. I do believe in other, that there's something other out there. And that becomes a gateway then for us to begin to think about, what is that mystery? What is that other? What is that potential being or source that put into us the ability to love, to self-sacrifice, to protect? Is that coming from somewhere else? Those are the sorts of questions that can lead you somewhere. One of my favorite things Jesus ever said is, he said, if you seek, you'll find. If you look, you'll find. If you knock, doors will be opened. If you ask questions, you will get answers. Studying Jesus, I don't get this vibe or this feeling that he was freaked out by anybody's questions. The only questions that ever bothered Jesus were the insincere ones, where people were trying to make some point, or passive-aggressive ones. He didn't like that stuff. But people asking honest, real questions, his response more often than not was, there you go. Keep asking. Keep seeking. For a long time as a Christian, I thought it was my responsibility to answer everybody's questions, and that made me miserable. Because I often had the same questions, but I had to pretend like I had the answers, because I have a theology degree. And they called me pastor. It was such a freeing time in my life when I was able to say, when I felt like it was actually okay to say, I don't know. Or, I never thought of that, but now I will. Thank you. If God is God, God does not need me to defend God's existence. Right? But I would often answer back, seek, keep seeking. Jesus promises. If the words of Jesus are to be trusted, then go seek. Seek under every corner you can find. There is no question. There is no question that is off limits. Nothing. Experiment with the answers to your questions to see. Push into it to see what you might find. I can remember I started the church when I was 23 years old, which you should not do. But it was successful in many ways early on. This was in Las Vegas. And I had been going a couple years. I was obviously a very young pastor, had a church of 200 or 300 people. And good things were happening. But that was really the major point in my life where I actually began to question things. And I would find myself in situations like this where I would be up teaching people, saying things that they told me to say about God, but asking myself, do I really believe it as I'm saying it? As a result, I got kind of depressed. I got some anxiety. And a friend of mine came to visit me, a mentor of mine. And this mentor would come and visit me every so often just to see how I was doing. And I remember sitting across the table from him at a restaurant. The great thing about him was he always bought dinner. And they were always super nice restaurants. He explained to me later what an expense account was and how that worked. But I, you know, especially early on, like, we can get steak and stuff. This is great. But he was the one person in my life who would always ask the sorts of questions that other people were afraid to ask. And I just remember him asking one time, do you still believe me? He asked me, do you still believe in God? And I wanted to say, of course I do. You've seen my business card. And I remember saying, probably for the first time in my life to someone out loud, I don't think so. I don't think so. And he said, yeah, I thought that's what you said. But you do. He said, you just define God all wrong. And that conversation turned me, taught me, that I remember him saying, I don't believe in the God you believe in either. You've got a pretty lame God. He was never afraid to say things like that. He was right. By the way, I had that exact same dinner with that person about 6 years later. And about 5 years ago. That's what a spiritual mentor is supposed to do, right? But there have been times over and over in my life where I've had to reevaluate who God really is because I've asked enough questions that my current sort of construct of God starts to waver. That is very normal for some people. And I am at a place right now where I love who I believe God to be. And I am not, this should encourage you as your second string pastor. I am not currently an atheist. Isn't that great news? Yeah, it's good. I don't... Whatever happened to Joe? I don't know if I've ever actually been an atheist, but I've had seasons in my life where I didn't believe in who in the God I had created in my mind, and I had to be readjusted. I've also tried to live as an atheist, by the way, and have just as many doubts about that, so it was no better. About after that first conversation with my spiritual guide, my mentor, I had gone back to, you know, leading that little church. And it was in Vegas. It was a fun time. Our average age was 25 years old as a church, the whole church. And we set up what we called elders, which is a Bible word that means old people. That's what it literally means. And the earliest Christian churches had elders, and these were the older, in that culture, the older men of the society who would help lead the church and shepherd. They use words like shepherd or pastor of the church. I knew that I didn't want to be the only shepherd pastor of the church, so I found some more mature folks in our church and asked them if they would serve as our first ever elders. The oldest was my friend Jim. He's 29. He's literally the oldest guy we could find that self-identified as a Christian, so we made him an elder. And then everybody else was in their 20s. And one of them was my friend Jeremy, who's an electrician at the MGM Garden. And Jeremy had a really different pathway to God than I did. It was very self-taught. He didn't really go to church growing up, but had this almost mysterious connection to God. He's one of the first people in my life that would say that God talked to him and it didn't register as just straight out crazy. And then there would be evidences in his life when he would say things like that that made me think, oh, maybe there's something to it. He didn't really at the time know a lot about the Bible, but he seemed to know God's, and we were pretty low, like, we didn't have a lot of people to choose from. So we asked Jeremy to be an elder, and I had him stand in front of the church. I think it was like six of them, and I said, this is what these guys are supposed to represent, that, you know, if you don't know how to be a Christian, just watch them and do what they do. And they all looked at me like, what? That was my understanding. I think it might still be of what it means to be. Not that they're going to be perfect, but at least they'll be an example of trying, right? Well, that week I got a call from Jeremy on my old school cell phone that had a flip phone with an antenna. And he was calling from his cell phone. He was on his lunch break. He said, hey, I'm at the Olympic Garden, which I know none of you know what that is. That used to be a strip club in Vegas, right? A gentleman's club. And remember, 3 days ago, I told everyone in the church to do everything he does. I said, what? No, leave. He's like, I'm just in the parking lot. He's like, God told me to go in and to pray for someone. I was like, I think God told you to stay in the parking lot and pray for someone. And we compromised, and that's what he did. He said, I just know that someone in there right now is supposed to come home. I said, Jeremy, you know, he has this weird relationship with God, and if God told you to do that, you know, I think you heard everything right except that one word about going in. Like, just do it. Didn't think anything of it. That next Sunday we were meeting, and as I was finishing my message, I watched a girl come in the back of the room, and she was a mess. She'd been crying. And I don't remember if I had had a good, like, message that Sunday, but there's nothing worse than someone coming in at the very end, and then it's like, we're done. And that's obviously someone that needed to hear something, unless God is in control and God knew that that he doesn't need me, which is what it was. this girl comes in and was just there for like 2 minutes, basically the closing prayer. She comes up afterwards just a mess. And she literally says to me, I've never been to church. I don't know anything about it. My grandma gave me this article. She was holding an article about our church that was written like 6 months ago in the Vegas newspaper. She said, I would like this church. And I'm here because I don't know what this means, but I'm supposed to come home. I said, I think you need to talk to Jeremy. So I went and got Jeremy, went in this little prayer room. It's about the size of this little thrust of the stage here. I sat in the corner and I watched an electrician from the MGM talk to a stripper. And I saw the kingdom come in a way I really haven't seen since. It was one of the most confounding, amazing moments in the skeptic's life. As neither one of them seemed nearly as surprised as I was. And when Jeremy basically said, oh, it's you? She's like, yeah. She said, I just was in the club and I felt like I needed to come home. And he said, when was this? And she said, it was lunch on Tuesday. And he's like, yeah, I was supposed to go in there and pray for you, but he wouldn't let me. That was one of the first moments in my life where I had literally no explanation. I tend, just the way my brain works, I tend to have, you know, that could be this or that or God, what just happened. And in that one, I was kind of like just down to like God. I've had a few other moments like that. One actually here that is a little personal. I won't ever tell you. But a moment in this building when someone came up to me and said something there's no way they can know. And I felt that again, like, oh. It's as if there is a God and God actually knows where I am and how to get a hold of me when God wants to. That's mind-blowing, actually, isn't it? And so those moments along my story are the things that don't let me be an atheist. But they don't just stop the questions. There's this really interesting story that Laura told me to tell you from Acts chapter 10. And I do think it's the right story to tell. So the book of Acts is written after the death, burial, resurrection of Jesus. And it's Jesus has now commissioned his disciples to go and to preach the gospel, which is that Jesus lived, died, and was risen from the grave, and that the kingdom of God is available for all who will receive him. And you ought to know, if you don't, that the early Christian movement, and they didn't even self-identify as Christians early on. They would say they were followers of Jesus. Or they would say they were followers of the way. They were all, with maybe a couple exceptions, all Jewish. It was a Jewish splinter movement. The other Jews called them a cult. The earliest followers of Jesus did not think they were starting a new religion. They thought they were fulfilling their faith as Jews. And so the earliest stories of the church are all about Jewish people who are now living with Christ as Messiah, with Jesus as Messiah. There's this prophecy in the Jewish scriptures written hundreds of years before Jesus that said, in the last days, God will come and he will pour his spirit on all people. And it says it will be men and women, it will be young and old. They believed that that time had come, that God had come to pour his spirit out through Jesus on all people. But when they said all people, what they meant was all of us, all the Jewish people. In the Hebrew scriptures in the Old Testament, there are many stories of God pouring his spirit out, which is to say, I would say something like what I experienced with the stripper and the electrician would be an outpouring of the spirit of God. There were times all throughout, you know, the history of the Jews where the Spirit of God would come upon Moses or Abraham or David or maybe a group of people, but then it would feel like it would leave, but then it would come back. And the prophecy was, you know, the Spirit of God was sort of seen as this thing that was hit or miss, but now, through Christ, it's going to be here all the time for all of us. How that is represented then in the second chapter of Acts is that all the believers were together, about 120 of them. They were praying during this festival of Pentecost, and they a wind came into the room, and this fire came into the room, and it rested upon all of them, and the Spirit of God fell on all the believers, all 120 of them, the young, the old, men, women, everyone. And they began to speak in tongues, which technically at that moment in church history just meant that they spoke other languages they could not have known. So miracles, right? Crazy things happening. And then Peter actually stands up and says, this is what was prophesied. And he quotes that scripture. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my Spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old and your young will see visions. This is it. He's saying, this is it. The great and glorious day of the Lord has come and has fallen upon us. He was saying to, and by us, he means the Jewish folks who believe in Jesus. All of us. He interpreted all of us to mean all of us in this room, which is a fair interpretation. Well, not too long after that, there's this story that's in the 10th chapter of Acts. That was the second chapter. This is the 10th. Where an angel of God appears to a Roman centurion, a Roman leader of 600 soldiers, who was not Jewish, uncircumcised, but called a God-fearer. He knew of the Hebrew God and worshipped the Hebrew God from afar, which was allowed to do, but not Jewish. So, in the minds of any Jewish follower of Jesus, then really sort of not able to receive Christ as Messiah. The 10th chapter of Acts, by the way, changes everything. And unless you come from a Jewish heritage, you would not be here right now without the 10th chapter of Acts. It changes everything. So he has this vision, or however he experienced it, of a man, angel, coming to him. And it's so specific. It's really a great story. He says, this angel comes and he says, Centurion God, or Cornelius, by the way, anyone else think Planet of the Apes? Cornelius, he says, don't think of a real person, not an ape, okay? Cornelius, God has seen that you know God, that you love God, and that you've given to the poor. He says, send some of your men to the house of Simon the Tanner and in Joppa. And there's another Simon, I know it's confusing, but there's another Simon called Peter there. And that Simon Peter, not Simon the Tanner, needs to come and visit you. So get some of your friends and go tell them to go to Simon's house. And I just love that angels come like with it's pre-GPS, right? So he's like, it's this guy's house. It's in this town. You know how to get to Joppa. Like, show up, and it's the other Simon. But Cornelius has this crazy, like, event, and then he sends some of his guys to go to Simon Peter's house. It takes a full day for them to get there. Simon the Tanner's house where Simon Peter is staying. Details, right? So as those men are almost approaching the house, Peter, Simon Peter, is on the roof of Simon the Tanner's house, just hanging out, sunbathing. It's noon. He's hungry, but he falls asleep. And he falls asleep and he has a dream. But in his dream, he's still on the roof of the house. And in the dream, he looks up into heaven, and this sheet that's gathered up by the four corners is lowered down from heaven. And then it opens up. And out of it comes all of the animals he's not allowed to eat, led by, I have to think, the most delicious animals of all, pigs, and shellfish, and snakes, and reptiles, and other animals that he's not allowed to eat because he's a good Jewish man. And he has never sinned against God in that way by breaking his dietary code. Almost all religions have dietary codes. It's a way of separating yourself and saying, like, you know, it's the same as, like, I'm a Muslim, I don't eat pork. I'm a Mormon, I don't drink coffee. I'm a Southern Baptist, I don't drink beer, right? It's the same, sorry. It's the same kind of thing. It's very normal for people to do this, to self-identify. And God told them to do it. He's doing a good thing by never eating these things. So bloop, all these animals come out. And the voice of God says, rise up, Peter, kill these animals and eat them. And Peter, knowing it's a test, says back to God in his dream, no, I have never had anything impure or unclean touch my mouth. And rink, 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 the sheet goes up. He's passed the test. Then, still in his dream, rink, 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 the sheet comes down and whoop, all the animals come out again. Snakes, animals you don't want to eat, delicious pigs, the whole thing. And the voice of God says, rise, Peter, kill and eat. He says, no, God, I've never done that. I will never do that to you. Peter has a kind of a history of, he's done the same thing with Jesus. That's a whole other story. So, rink, 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 rink. The sheep goes up, still sleeping, still hungry in his dream. Rink, 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 rink. Sheep comes down, pigs, on and so forth. Rise, Peter, kill and eat. Peter says, no, God, I won't do it. I know the test. I passed the test three times. And God basically says, it's not a test, you knucklehead. Rise, kill and eat. Do not call anything impure or unclean that I have decided to make clean. And then he wakes up. He wakes up because there's three guys at the door. He goes down, he meets these three guys. They're Romans, which is an intimidating thing for the early church that's being hunted. They're Gentiles. And they say to him, our master, Cornelius the centurion, had a weird vision, and God gave us this exact address to come get a guy named Simon. He even said there's two Simons, and we need to get the one called Peter, and you need to come tell our boss who Jesus is, who the Messiah is. And Simon, Peter, goes. He would not have gone without that vision, because he would have thought the gospel, the good news, is not actually for him. But because of this vision, he goes. And he should not enter a Gentile's house, according to Jewish custom. But he does. He goes into the centurion's house. And when he goes in, Cornelius falls on his face in front of Peter. And Peter says, I'm just a man. I'm just as confused as you are about what's going on. Stand up and tell me what's happening. And Cornelius says, I saw the vision. They said to send for you and that you would give me more information about this God I worship. And Peter says, there's something you need to know. Until, you know, a day ago, I didn't think I was allowed to be in your house. We're not supposed to socialize. I thought, but I had an even weirder vision than you had. And he explains it. And then he says, this is what you don't know. Jesus lived, died, was buried, rose again to fulfill the prophets. And now Peter says, you can almost see him saying it for the first time and making it up as he goes. And now, I guess, because of the dream and the blankets and all the stuff, you can believe it too. And that's such a risk for Peter. And it says Peter brought some, you know, Jewish Christian people with him, and they basically went, ah! And the Gentiles kind of went, what? This changes everything. Everything. And Peter's out on a limb. And then what happens immediately is, a wind, fire, and speaking in tongues from the Gentiles. And everyone's like, yep, that's what happened to us back in chapter 2. That's legit. That's what it looks like when the Spirit of God falls. So, yep, Peter's right. And then Peter says, what would stop me from baptizing? Who's going to stop me? Is basically what he says. Anybody going to stop me from baptizing these people and letting them become followers of the way? And the first Gentiles are converted. The next four chapters, just to let you know, they fight about it. And then by chapter 15, they're like, Peter's right, let's do it. Let's let everyone in. Peter says this verse to Cornelius. He says, I love the way it's phrased. As he's convincing himself as he says it, I think. Now I really am beginning to understand that God does not show favoritism, but in every nation, anyone who fears God and does what is right is acceptable to God. That story is a paradigm shifter if you're willing to go there. The first thing I would ask, and we're going to get to four learnings here, but this is a bonus one, is if you had the same vision as Peter, what's going to be in your sheet? What's going to come out and hear God say, do this? And you're going to say, I've never done that. I know if it was the church I grew up in, what would come out? You know, Bud Light, Jack Daniels, playing cards, Dungeons and Dragons. Like, those were the things growing up that, cigarettes, of course. It was Kentucky. You could sell cigarettes, you just couldn't smoke them. You know, these things would come out, and could you imagine? And it is not wrong to abstain from those things. And most Jewish Christians still kept the diet. You know, it wasn't really about the dietary code. But you could imagine having a vision like that where you feel like you hear God saying, you know, come on and, you know, let's go smoke a cigarette, have a beer, let's play some cards. And that would be shocking to some people that have grown up thinking those things were completely off limits, wrong. Here's four learnings. That's just to think about. The first one here. Faith, I would define faith like this based on this story and other things. Faith is an action that's spurred by some sort of often imperfect belief. I think we mix up faith and belief to our detriment, and some of us are harder on ourselves than we need to be when we say we lack faith, when what we really lack is just some belief. But you don't have to have all of the belief. You just have to have enough belief to take the action. Faith is a verb. Faith is what you do. Faith is this. Faith is Peter acting on the belief that that vision meant something and walking to that guy's house and making a confident statement that God is allowing Gentiles into the way. That's faith. Belief is just that dream meant something. For Cornelius, faith is sending his guys to go get that guy. You know, neither one of them actually, their beliefs were not complete. The greatest thing about the story for me, that story, is that here we have Peter, who becomes kind of a big deal, right, in the whole Christian thing. Peter has to go to a Roman, uncircumcised Gentile to fully understand who God is. And this other guy, who's not Jewish, but who loves God with all of his heart and is known as someone who gives his money to the poor, just the greatest guy in the world, and seeking God with all of his heart, doesn't have the full story. He needs some stranger to come and tell him more. They have to have each other for their faith to be complete, right? And this, I think, leads us to realize we can learn from anyone. Not only can we learn from anyone, at times, we have to learn from people that we would think maybe could have no way to teach us about God because they're so different. But that's how God often works. Second thing, God knows where you live and he speaks your native language. I know, I guess we technically know that about God, right? But like in the stories I've told you, if you've ever had one of those moments where you're like, whoa, that just went from philosophy or ideology to feeling like very real in this moment, that God knows, that God shows up. When I say God knows where we live and he speaks our language, to me that means God can show up, God can and will show up right where you are, and will speak to you in a way that you get it and that you understand. Trust me on this one. If Cornelius had a vision of a sheep coming down with a pig, good Roman Cornelius going to kill that pig and have some bacon. And that's the end of that vision. God is not going to waste the cool sheet thing on Cornelius. That's for Peter. In the same way, I think the weird stuff happening with the wind and the fire and all that stuff, I'm sure it was great for I'm sure it was a really cool experience for the Romans. But they don't know the prophet Joel. They don't know what's been predicted. That was God coming to the Jews and saying, look, it's true. God is going to use your history, your background, your beliefs as they stand right now to reveal God's self to you. That's what God does. And where we get in trouble, I think, is when we judge others and say, there's no way you could have experienced God like that. That is falling back into the trap of believing that God has poured out his spirit only on people like us, when God's spirit is undefinable and mysterious and goes where it wants. And that's a Jesus quote, more or less. Number three, you can know all about God, but experience God less. This is Peter's story, right? Peter knows, not only is Peter learned in the Hebrew scriptures, because he grew up Jewish. He also walked with Jesus every day for 3 years. He saw the resurrected Christ. He heard teachings from Jesus that nobody else heard. He knew about, you know, with maybe the exception of James and John, Peter knows as much about the revelation of Jesus than anyone on earth. He knows it all, but he doesn't know enough yet to go break this huge barrier and allow the Gentiles in. And he hasn't experienced God actually in the same way that Cornelius had. he knew everything, but he had to be prompted to have a God experience. And Cornelius is the opposite, number four, where you can fully experience God, but you still need to learn more. There are those who, when God is so sort of experiential with them, that they might say, I don't really actually need to learn anything about God because I completely know God. Well, that's not true either. The reality is that when we come together, we begin to get the full picture, a full enough picture, right, of the presence of God. This is me. When I was 24, sitting across from my mentor saying, I don't believe in God. And my mentor saying to me, yes, you do, you dumb dumb. Like, you don't believe in the God you're talking about because you define God wrong. Here, read this book, basically is what happened. Not that mysterious, right? Just someone a little older, wiser than me giving me the right book. That's what it was. Sometime later, it's me sitting in the corner of a prayer room watching an electrician and a stripper talk and having my mind blown and realizing I was the only, trust me, in that room, we want to go down on Bible trivia right now for $100. I was going to win. The electrician and the stripper didn't know anything, but they knew God. And trust me when I tell you that was a little frustrating and amazing and eye-opening. Here I sit with a degree and a lifetime of study, dumbfounded by the actual presence and experience of God. So who taught me more about God? My Old Testament professor or the stripper? It's a tie. It was a trick question. But my story does not work without both of them. My understanding of the picture of God is empty without both of those experiences and all the experiences that have followed. I want to conclude here, if you would just allow me to give you a gift of a couple minutes. Let's pray. Maybe close your eyes if you're comfortable doing that. And we're just going to acknowledge a couple things. Take a deep breath if you need to sort of calm your mind down. Just be present. Be in this moment with me. Don't think about the past. Don't think about the future. This is the only thing that we have right now, is this moment with each other. Bring to mind someone you love. Ask yourself, where does that love come from? Bring to mind someone who's forgiven you. Ask where the source of that kind of love comes from. Bring to mind one of those strange events in your life that coincidence just doesn't really explain. And ask yourself, is there something other? Is there a mystery in the universe? Is that mystery God? bring to mind your friend or acquaintance who is completely different than you, different faith, different upbringing, different race, different culture. Look in them for that they know of God that you don't. What is that? A lot of us are like Peter, and a lot of us are like Cornelius. You probably know which one you are. Maybe the analogy doesn't work for all of us, but you may be the sort of person that just knows a lot about God, but has some problems experiencing God. You may be a person who experiences God, but actually doesn't know a lot about God. Can you give yourself to trust that in this community, we round each other out? That God is pairing us up to show us a fuller, deeper picture. Some of us need to stop beating ourselves up for our lack of faith and understand that faith is really just action spurred on by what belief we have right now. And God, we ask you, we beg with you, engage enough belief in us to take those faithful steps. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, guys. You can take communion as you leave. That helps us remember Jesus, what he's done for us. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.